This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 160. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Berners and Mark Garraway. Welcome back to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Berners and Garraz join me. How's it going, gents?
Yeah, not bad. Thank you very much. Not too bad. Just looking forward to getting some cricket in because we've been washed out down here in Somerset, as you may have seen on Sky Sports News. We've got cricket grounds underwater down this neck of the woods. So we're hoping that we get a game in Saturday.
I've just seen one of your sight screens going down the road outside, Garraz. I'm in London.
Well, it sounds like we've been lucky because I actually got to play a game on Saturday. So that was interesting. It was cold. It was wet underfoot, but it stayed dry, and we got in the required 100 overs.
So, very impressive.
Yeah, I know. We had a team photo, and everyone's in about six layers. It's very funny. Hands in pockets and everything. It's the most shambolic team photo I've ever seen.
Mitchell in there.
I watched our second team play on Saturday and it looked absolutely bitter. It was hideous. First team practiced indoors where we were nice and warm, but the second team were out there getting icicles on their noses and any other extremity that was exposed.
You playing this year, Garraz?
Don't know, mate. I've had a couple of offers, actually. I'm sort of weighing it up a little bit at the moment. And my body says no, because I've kept wicket in a couple of middle practices so far. And as much as I've kept my fitness up pretty well, there's nothing quite like playing cricket, is there? Firing muscles that you didn't think you had. So at the moment, I'm gonna say no. But if the sun shines a little bit and I hit a couple of decent balls in the nets, then that can all change, I'm sure.
Speaking of nets, we've had a big announcement on Pitch Vision this week about the Pitch Vision cricket simulator, which has been developed in India at our facility there, the Pitch Vision Cricket Research Centre, which is a pretty state-of-the-art facility. Berners, you know all about that, don't you?
It is. It's absolutely out of this world. And for any listeners out there, I definitely recommend that you straight away follow this up with a little scour of our Pitch Vision YouTube channel, where you'll see this in full daylight. But yeah, it's a quite a magnificent system we've come up with there. It's actually the world's first ever batting simulator. So basically allows a player to go in, play a number of shots, and we track every single ball, the direction of it, the shot outcome. And as you'll see from the video footage, we can create interactive games. So it's very useful for a kind of commercial standpoint to get out there and enjoy cricket and playing that in a kind of social and commercial entity, as you would go to, say, an American bowling lane or going hit a few golf balls at the driving range. Why not now go and play, an interactive game against your mate? We've also got the ability to play in different regions. So, for instance, I could play against Garraz up here in London. He could be down there in Somerset, and we could both bat an over, and we could compete against each other and see who scored the most runs. So it's a real revelation in both technology and also, you know, the commercial kind of fun aspect to playing cricket. And yeah, check that out on the YouTube videos. But there should be one coming to you very soon. We're trying to get some set up regionally throughout the UK. Also across the world, so in India, Australia, South Africa, the key playing cricket nations. So that will hopefully filter down into, becoming a highly viable academic tool as well, whereby you can, of course, bring the real game situation indoors, which is often a bugbear of training, where people often frequently hit you in the air or slash at balls that potentially they wouldn't do in the normal game. We now have the ability to actually give that feedback to players and coaches and give them, you know, batting performance feedback as per their results in a normal game, seeing how many times they hit the ball in the air, how many times they find the gap if they're struggling against a certain style of bowling, i.e. leg spin, where they can't work singles or pick out certain gaps during certain game situations. Hopefully all of those issues will now be remedied by this new batting studio. So, yeah, that's what we've been busy with.
The way it's going to happen is that you take your bat, you head off to your local indoor cricket centre or indoor academy, wherever's nearby to you, and you can have your go on it, and you can get the results from that straight away, and you can use it either as an entertainment purpose, i.e. have a game with your mates and see who gets the most runs, or as a training purpose, you know, if you've got some kind of technical difficulty and you want to work on that in a net situation, you'll be able to do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of dicing with both halves of that cricketing conundrum of guys that want to play seriously and dedicate, say, a whole Saturday afternoon to and become the next David Gower. And those guys that want to have a quick hit, you know, it's a bit like the old scenario when Wimbledon's on, every single tennis court in England's jam-packed. You go there a week after and there's no one playing. We'd like to think that something like this will, you know, when the test match is on, it will drive and inspire players who maybe are not even connected to a club but want to go and have a game, get a feel for hitting cricket balls around and have some fun and play against their mate. Yeah.
So, Gareth, from a coaching point of view, I mean, you've coached at various different levels. You've coached at schools, at clubs, up to international level. How do you see this?
Well, it allows you to simulate games, doesn't it? And I think one of the best practices that you can do anywhere is middle practices and setting up game situations. But obviously, you're not always able to do that, whether it be the weather, the facilities, whatever the case may be. There are a lot of things that get in the way of that happening. And you've only got a small window, particularly in England, you've only got a small window for actually setting those games up in amongst your competition. Whereas you've now got the facility to do this all year round. And that's the exciting bit, you know, to measure performance, to measure where the balls goes, how many runs are scored, is invaluable, really. And that sort of feedback can have a huge effect on cricketers when they go into match situations, because they've been there and they've done it. And I remember from 2005, we played a game against Warwickshire, and Warwickshire had Nintini at the time bowling for them, and they got 276. We lost early wickets and we chased it down and got it with about two overs to go with four wickets left. And I said to a couple of the guys that finished the game off, well played, and they said, well, you know, we've done it four or five times before in our middle practices, you know, when we've been out there and set games up. Well, you can do that anywhere now with this system, and that to me is the most exciting bit. You don't have to be a first-class cricketer with groundsmen working for you to make the pitches fantastic so you can practice on. You can go down to your local centre, get this set up, and away you go.
I always love the one where it's the old call goes out, last over, six balls left, 20 needed, and it just turns into a riot. That was six, no, it wasn't, caught in mid-off. You know, all of that kind of thing. Now we can actually you know, objectively give some form of outcome and say, actually, son, you're out. And there it is on the big screen. And he gets a printout and he trots off down the road, having lost the game.
It's all about consequence, isn't it? You know, and that's where net practice, as you say there, Neil, it can be so limiting, because, you know, it comes down to personal opinion and perspective. And ultimately, a game of cricket isn't about personal opinion and perspective, is it? You know, when it comes down to 15 off six or whatever, you either win or lose. You know, it's black and white. It's not grey, and it's not discussion based. And that's what makes this system, I think, an unbelievable resource. Certainly from my perspective, you know, I want to be working in that for as much as I possibly can, because the players will benefit massively. We try to do it as best we can at Millfield. We've got fantastic facilities down here to develop cricketers. But yet those conversations are, oh, that went to the field or that didn't. Occur all the time, whereas with this system they wouldn't have to occur, and people either get it right or they get it wrong, and then by getting it wrong they learn how to get it right, and that's the way forward.
Yeah, and of course the best bit about it as well is it all syncs with the web, so it means that if players do go time and time again, they'll start to create, you know, a portfolio of knowledge, so they'll know that they always hit the ball to cover or they always hit the ball to mid off or mid on, which, you know, that's inevitably where we want to be, is provide them with more knowledge, because knowledge is power, and they're going to become better cricketers or even players in our simulator, because they're going to know where to hit the ball and, you know, have a better idea of what they're actually trying to achieve.
Very exciting, mate. I can only see that being a huge winner.
Yeah, the idea of, you know, having a driving range equivalent for cricket is a very good one, I think, and one that's been overlooked so far because technology hasn't necessarily been able to keep up with it. I guess there'll be people listening to this who think, well, hang on a minute, you know, this is only going to be important for the top level guys. I mean, it's not going to make any difference to a developing cricketer or anything like that. I mean, that's generally what happens, the objections you get with any new technology coming in. But I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, especially if they're going to be going into central facilities, which already exist all over the world anyway, then it's just going to be a seamless addition to people's training tools. And if you can measure success, then you're more likely to carry it through onto the field when, like you said, Gareth, that ultimate measurement of the W or the L is there.
Completely right, you know, and it's all about, it comes down to that deliberate practice that we've talked about again, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, we can do quite a lot of subjective woolly practice. We could waste thousands of hours on it and not actually improve at the rate that we're looking for. Whereas this adds another element to that deliberate practice. And we know whether we're doing things right or not, which means that we can make the adjustments and the appropriate adjustments, and we can set the appropriate challenge level to push people on. And that's so exciting. So, you know, as you say, finance people always stick the financial thing up, but for me, you know, what do you want if you're a cricket club and you're really serious and you've got an indoor facility that attached to your ground or maybe at a local school or whatever, an investment of X amount of pounds to make sure that your practice is absolutely on the money all of the time is only going to draw you revenue, because you're going to win more games, and winning more games gets more people into the club, and all of a sudden you have five or six 11s as opposed to your three, which generates revenue, brings in parents, brings in sponsors, and to me that it's an investment way of going about it, as opposed to an expenditure.
And when it's the same price as a Toyota Yaris, you can't go wrong.
Exactly right, mate. Exactly right.
And we were, my club team were almost bowled out on Saturday. Had to have a last wicket stand to save the game. Maybe if they'd used the simulator a bit more in the winter, we'd not have collapsed as dramatically as we did on Saturday. So I'm definitely feeling the need for that at my club at the moment. Okay, so let's move on with the show. And before we do, we'll just have our little wrap up, our little yes no round, which we have three questions, and all we can do is answer yes or no to those questions. So Berners, without further ado, what are the three questions of the yes no round this week?
First question, fast bowlers should all have a long and high bound into the crease.
No.
No!
Second question, a team of captains can lead to too many cooks spoiling the broth.
Yes.
No.
Fast bowlers are getting faster.
Yes.
No.
Time now for us to answer your coaching questions on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. And of course, every week the best question wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you've got the two questions that we're going to answer this week. What's the first one?
Do indeed. First question's come in from Trashant, and his question revolves around strength of the mind. He's played his first game just last week. He was lucky enough to avoid the rain. He's 15 years old, and he's just wondering about what kind of things he can do in difficult situations just to strengthen his mind and his power mentally. So it's quite a common question, but I'm sure you guys have got some ideas, bearing in mind he's 15 as well.
Yeah, I mean, we do talk about this a lot, and one of the things that Gareth has mentioned many times, and certainly is I've definitely brought into my coaching, is this idea of robust confidence, which is, you know, which we've had many times, we've talked about with Kevin Peterson and other players in that area, and that idea of having put in the time and the effort of practice to know that when you are in a difficult situation that you have the skills to implement that particular outcome that you want. So, you know, if you're a bowler and you're standing at the top of the mark and it's the last over, you know what you want to do, and you know that most of the time you're going to be able to do it. You can put the the pressure of the situation to one side almost, and just be able to do whatever you want to do, whether it's bowl six Yorkers or hit the last ball for 4 and 6, which I saw Dominic, speaking of confidence, I saw Dominic Cork do on a televised game once, the former England international, of course. I think the situation was 2 balls left as he was walking in, 10 to win. First ball he hit 6, second ball he hit 4, and he put the bat under his arm and walked off as if it was nothing. He knew exactly what he needed to do, he did it, and then he walked off. That's what robust confidence is all about.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think you've nailed it there, David. It is about crossing every single T and dotting every I, doing everything leading into games of cricket to make sure that even if you don't actually have a good day at the office, you know that you've done everything possible to give yourself the best chance of success. And robust confidence is all about giving yourself the best chance of success. So I'm with you on that one. I mean, a couple of additions that we could probably put on that is how effectively we review performance as well. Because what tends to happen with cricketers, particularly young cricketers, is that they'll go, their confidence sort of mirrors the way that they've performed in a match. So, for example, if somebody gets 50 in the first game, naught in the second one, their confidence tends to yo-yo. And robust confidence comes from preparation, but also the ability to review effectively as well. An article I'm putting out next week actually is about how you give yourself feedback and how you review things in order to not go up and down. So, you know, if you hit a ball in a net, for example, if you hit the ball in the air, a lot of players would let that affect their next 5 or 6, 10 balls. Well, that isn't robust confidence. If you can hit a ball in the air and say, right, I've hit the ball in the air because I've made contact with that early, and the next time I hit the ball, I'm going to keep that along the ground by letting the ball come onto me more, that's going to give you more robust confidence. So I find that if you can review and reflect effectively after a game, as opposed to being based on purely your outcome, then that will help to build up robust confidence and keep you at a level of confidence as opposed to a yo-yoing type graph of confidence.
I'd also add to that that you can teach yourself how to handle the moments where you are feel like you're losing that confidence in the middle. If you are in that situation, and some people are better than others at dealing with those situations and reacting positively or reacting negatively to those situations, if you can train yourself to react positively by saying to yourself when you feel like something negative has happened and you feel like, oh God, it's all going wrong, that you can recognize that thought and then be able to put it out of your mind and think something positive instead. That is definitely something that you can train yourself to do. So of course you still need to put in the work and the practice, and then you'll be more confident anyway. But then if you are one of those people who has less confidence generally, then you can also develop a method of recognizing when you are losing that confidence a little bit, and then say to yourself, well, I'm not going to lose that confidence. I know I can do the job. I'm going to bowl the next ball exactly where I want it, or whatever the particular outcome is that you want. So, I mean, that's just a matter of identification and then stopping it. I mean, there's loads of little methods that people use. Like, I think Bob Woolmer says about, imagining a table with a white tablecloth and just sweeping everything off the table so it's clean again. And we've talked about the stop technique as well, where you imagine a red traffic light or a stop sign, and you can do it that way. So there are way little tricks and tips, if you like. But yeah, it's all built on top of that ability to practice hard and then review how you've done once the game's over.
One last little thing as well is the ability to have some positive affirmations. Now, we often review, and this goes a little bit back to review, what we don't do so well. But we've all got strengths. It doesn't matter what level of cricket you're playing. You've all got strengths that you can really tell yourself are your strengths over and over and over again to build up your confidence. And it's something that Ricky Ponting talked about a lot when he was at Somerset. And he had 10 things that he would tell himself every night before he batted. And obviously his 10 things would be very different from somebody who's playing third 11 cricket. But, you know, I've played third 11 cricket in my time, and I've seen some magnificent cover drives. So if you are one of those people that hits a cover drive really well, then tell yourself that that is one of your strengths. You know, if you're somebody who is always there at the end of the innings and has a history of finishing games off and being the bloke that walks in at the end of a game, you know, having completed a win, then make sure that you tell yourself that. And a lot of players, you'll see inside their coffins or their bags, or you'll see on their iPads or their iPhones, a list of like five or six things that they know about themselves to be true. You know, I am a good deaf bowler. My Yorker is fantastic. I've worked so hard at my slower ball, it's going to pay dividends. Those sort of things, you look at those sort of things sort of three times a week, then they're only going to have a positive effect on your mental strength.
Next question's from Y Timol, who's recently started coaching a talented 16-year-old cricketer, and he's saying that he bowls very well with excellent consistency, regularly hits targets in practice when they're doing target bowling, and bowls with a good pace. However, in his approach to the crease, in his bound, he does not use his left leg to propel his body over the bowling crease, but instead chooses to skip off his right leg over the bowling crease. So he's asking if this would be a classic example of a bowler bowling off the wrong foot. He then goes on to ask whether it would be advisable to change his action to a more conventional bowling style. And would this in this manner, i.e. skipping off the right leg over the bowling crease, cause stress to his body, resulting in injury? Please note that apart from this issue, the other basic components of his bowling process is sound. Over to you guys, because I haven't got a clue.
Well, I've only seen this once with a bowler, and it was with a young bowler who was who wasn't at the highest standard anyway. So we sort of took him aside and we corrected that issue, just to sort of get his bowling action sort of a bit more standard and orthodox. So, but this is slightly different because A, he's a bit older than the guy that I work with, and also he seems to be doing things right in terms of what's happening at the other end. He's bowling at good pace and he's putting the ball in the right areas, as they say nowadays. So I wouldn't say it's bowling off the wrong foot as such. When I think of bowling off the wrong foot, I imagine that it's just you just have a bowler who has a slight difference in the timing of his landing of his front foot, and the arm coming over tends to be not a softer landing on the front foot. So it looks a little bit like they're bowling off the wrong foot, but they aren't really bowling off the wrong foot. This is him jumping off the wrong foot. But if he's doing things right, I mean, Gareth's probably, you've got more experience in this matter than me, but if he's doing things right, I would be loath to change anything unless there are any serious problems, and I can't really think of anything. So, Gareth, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd concur with that, because the information, we're only working off the information that we've got here, which is obviously written, and it's, you know, it's in good depth. Obviously, if I was to advise on a bowling action, I'd want to see it before I did it. The idea here that the bowling action and other parts of bowling actions are sound is an excellent one, you know. I would then have to clarify what the why Timol's impression of a sound bowling action is, because you know, if you put four coaches together and ask them to talk about a sound bowling action, they may have four slightly different views or opinions. So it's a really difficult one to advise on, but I completely agree with you. If everything is in line at ball release, then to me, keep going, because you're bowling with good pace, you're hitting your targets really well, you've got talent, you're also 16 years old, and it's not always easy when somebody has got a history of bowling in that way, and a significant history of bowling, probably since the age of 4 or 5, where they first picked up a cricket ball or a tennis ball, of bowling in that fashion, to reverse that. And to me, unless somebody is actually going to hurt themselves, or you can get significant performance gain out of changing somebody's action, then I won't touch it. You know, I won't go anywhere near it. This sounds like an example of that. But as I say, it's difficult for us to really assess it down to finite detail, because we've not got video footage in front of us, because there could be something in there that might need a little bit of refinement. But it's blooming difficult to get somebody to the age of 16, who's got a history behind them, to be able to go from this bowling action with the legs working in the fashion, the double skip, as they bound into the stumps into a more conventional action. And there's been some really good examples of people that have done this. Tanveer, for example, who lit up the first edition of the IPL and won the World 2020 with Pakistan, is a good example of somebody who's got that style of bowling. A guy that I play cricket with, a guy called David Pryke, who bowled for Natal, bowled in that fashion. And obviously, you know, Mike Proctor, who was one of the world leading cricketers and in terms of all-rounders, probably still up there, you know, amongst the greats. And so there's been some really good examples of guys that have obviously started that type of bowling when they were young, very similar to this young fella here, and it's very difficult to change it. And as long as they're not injuring themselves, or you don't think, you know, if you think you can get some performance enhancement out of them, then you might look to change it. But to me, I'd leave them if everything's safe and they're performing at a good level already.
It's probably a case of, if he'd have been coached, you know, when he first started at 6 or 8 or 11 or whenever he first started, if he'd have been coached, he probably wouldn't. That would probably have been changed fairly quickly, and he'd have been done just as well, maybe even better, without that particular tick. But it's not a deal breaker if you've got that. It's not like your hips and shoulders are misaligned, which is a lot more serious. It's something which is not perfection. But if it's not causing a major problem at that stage, then, you know, you would really want to think hard before changing it. So, it's one of those where if it was changed, it probably wouldn't matter so much. But as it's there now, it doesn't really matter either in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, if he's not going to injure himself or through having that action, then, you know, a question you'd ask would be, what's his injury history been to date? Because at the age of 16, he may have experienced some, but if he hasn't, then, you know, crack on, really. The slight danger with all bowlers, irrespective of action, is when they reach their peak height velocity and they start really growing. And we see that, don't we? I mean, I had Chris Tremlett when he was 15 on the academy at Hampshire, and he grew massively, and their spines were growing and their limb lengths were changing. And that's the same for any bowler. So you just have to be very wary during that period. And we actually took Chris away from having high impact bowling for nearly a year and worked on other aspects of his game at that time to make sure that was right. And whether you bowl off the wrong foot, whether you've got a midway action, whether you've got a side on action, you know, that sort of thing still applies. So he's coming up to that time, 16 years old. He might even be in that time already. So that's something to keep an eye out. But in terms of the action, if he's safe and if he's performing, then stick with it.
Okay, coming up in the next minute is our infamous soapbox, where one of the team has the chance to rant for an uninterrupted minute on any cricket or cricket coaching related subject that they like. So this week, straight from the mouth of Berners, it's the soapbox. Over to you, Berners.
Club players' inability to play certain shots, you often see them trying to replicate a number of shots which have crept into the T20 format. We all know about the reverse hit and the sweep shot and the reverse tickle and the lob over the keeper. And you see these guys walking out there now in game situations where they just do not need to be played. And the understanding of it all completely myths me that, you know, they're watching these guys who are professional players. They're practicing every day to execute these shots and taking them out into the ballpark. And they're then taking them out on a Tuesday night after a day in the office. You often see them trying to tickle these ones behind square, and you just think, well, hang on a minute, you'd have got one run for that when you knocked it down to mid off or mid on. Cut them out of your shot selection, play simple cricket, accumulate runs as you would normally, win cricket matches, don't let your teammates down, and generally spend more time in the middle.
Okay, so that's all we've got time for this week. But before we go, we've got a couple of little things to sort out. The first of which is the competition winner, of course. Every time you send in a question, you have a chance to win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had two questions this week. One from Y Timmer about the 16-year-old bowler who bowls off the wrong foot-ish, and one from Trash Ant who wants to know about mental strength. So, Gareth, which one wins the prize this week?
This week's Y Timmer, because it's a newish question. It's one that we haven't had before, and one that challenges us a little bit, which is what we want in our questions. So Y Timmer wins the competition this week.
Congratulations, and get in touch with us, and you will be able to take your pick of the courses from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. If you want to send in your own question to us, you can do it in a number of ways. Bonus, what are the details?
They can give us a call at 020-88-167-691, or drop us an email, and the address for that is coach@pitchvision.com. And don't forget to check out our YouTube channel, which has got all of those video segments of what we discussed earlier on.
Absolutely. We're also on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us on Facebook. You can also find us in iTunes. Again, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. And if you don't want to use iTunes, head over to pitchvision.com, click on the podcast option, and you can get the RSS feed there. So just before we finish up, we've got enough time right at the end to talk about this week's tailender, the term of the week that is slightly lesser known. And this week I was playing a game where we had a player drop out at the last minute, and so we were looking for someone as a replacement. And one of the options that we came up with, the captain said to me, what about this chap? And I said to him, well, he's a good bat, but he's a bit of a Wickham. And I had to explain to him that a Wickham, of course, was a related to the Wickham Wanderers football team. And, of course, we all know the club player who is told to field at mid-on, and you turn around three balls later and he's a deep mid-wicket. This particular guy is a proper Wickham. I mean, he's all over the shop. You don't even know which side of the field he's going to be on if you turn your back on him. So
I like that one.
Everyone's got a Wickham in their team. So next time you see someone wandering away, make sure you you give him a nudge and call him a Wickham.
Monty Panesar's a Wickham.
Is he? Is he really?
I've heard Monty Panesar is known to eat boiled eggs with the shell on. I wouldn't argue with him.
Monty, you can always tell when Monty's fielded after he's been told it. I wouldn't say that I ever used the term Wickham, but we'd have talked to him about his positioning, and then you'd see a huge gouge in the outfield down at fine leg or deep wherever he's fielding, trying to keep him out of the way. I'm not sure he was ever the groundsman's favourite, but yeah, that's the only way. We always thought we should give him a flag to stick down in the ground so we can go back to that every ball.
Brilliant.
So there you go. It happens at every level. Well, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.